And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. You've done this a few times, so.
Just a couple.
Well, thank you for this. Worked out perfectly, by the way. Thank you. I'm sorry. I screwed up the calendar thing. So
no, that's okay.
No, sorry about that. So as a father of a 17-year-old daughter who just got back from the Bahamas, thank you is the first thing I have to thank you for your work, man. How to get started? Can you just explain what sex trafficking even is?
Yeah, so a lot of people get it confused with smuggling, the word human trafficking, actually, human trafficking and smuggling. Basically, human trafficking is a crime against a person, and that crime actually involves two crimes. It's sex trafficking, commercial sexual exploitation, and then labor trafficking. And so those are crimes against a person, whereas smuggling is actually a crime against the border or the state, and that involves some element of consent. Now, people who are smuggled are typically transported from point A to point B, and along the way of their transportation, they could be a victim of forced sexual exploitation or forced labor, and then they would be a victim of human trafficking, but they are two separate crimes.
And I was digging around because I'm not at all – this topic is super important, so rarely talked about. And I, when I came in contact with you, I'm like, I realized I know almost nothing, and so I started doing. And one of the first things I found out is it. You know, you just assume that one, this doesn't happen in the U.S. That was my assumption. Like, oh, so you're talking about we get somebody from South America and they go to Germany or whatever. I don't. But the problem's sizable in the U.S. Yes.
Yeah, so what it is people think it's happening somewhere else, and that is part of the myth about it, for sure. Have you ever seen Sound of Freedom?
No. Do I need to?
So that was a movie that came out, I think, in 2024, and that was a big buzz about this movie, a lot of controversy as far as it getting picked up by major networks.
Oh, I know about it. I know about it. I haven't seen it. Yep.
Okay, so that is a really great movie. It's got people talking about human trafficking, but even that movie isn't what it looks like here domestically in the United States. So in the United States, a documentary I would suggest your viewers watch is Sex Trafficking in America, which is the title of the documentary, and it's actually a documentary that came out in May of 2019, and it was focused on law enforcement's reaction to and response to this problem. And actually they filmed our unit, our human trafficking unit, and they followed us around for 3 years. So myself and my fellow other detectives are in that movie, and it basically follows, you know, how we do the undercover operations to target sex buyers and traffickers. And then also it follows the story of a little girl who, much like is common now, met her trafficker online and then was trafficked actually between a couple of traffickers, and then ultimately was rescued and pulled out of that lifestyle and just all the things that she went through. So it's a really good depiction of what it really actually looks like here domestically.
And say the name of the movie again?
Sex Trafficking in America. And it's Frontline PBS, and also you can watch it on YouTube.
Okay, cool. What about this attracted you, though?
What about what?
What about sex trafficking attract? Like, how did you become focused on it?
Oh, yeah. So when I was working patrol, I decided to start a family. And so I moved from a patrol position working nights and weekends to normal days off as a school resource officer. And I blinked and 6 years went by as a school resource officer. And every day we don't get to take the police car home. And so I went into the police station one day and passed an area of the police station called the juvenile holding area. And I happened to see in the window a little girl that I recognized from when she was in middle school, like 13, 14 years old. And on that day, she was still a juvenile, 16, almost 17. And I popped my head in and I asked her, well, why are you in trouble? And that's when she told me she was under arrest for prostitution, which, you know, I had already been a police officer six, seven years by then. And I had no idea that youth were getting involved in prostitution. So that's what really sparked my interest. And uniquely at that time, I was starting to be asked by the actual unit, it was called the Vice Unit back then, to come do temporary assignments and go out with them, and because they borrowed females from patrol to pose as prostitutes out on the streets. And so that's kind of how I fell into this situation of, you know, really thinking about the problem and how I might be able to help it.
Where do you fall? I'm not talking about children now. I'm talking legally. Where do you fall on the idea of legalized prostitution for adults? Not traffic, not anything, just a licensed professional. Where do you fall on that?
I would be opposed. I don't think that that's the answer. I think that that is going to contribute to a whole lot of other problems that we don't even recognize. And I think we can learn from other countries that have done that and how it's exploded into a bigger problem. And didn't actually solve anything except for created other problems. We also don't know that those girls that are, because there are legalized areas within the United States and in Nevada, not all of Nevada, and certainly not where the Strip is located, is it legal? It's not. And that people are in disbelief when I tell them that, but actually it's only a certain county in Nevada where it is legal. And we don't know that those people participating in that are actually voluntarily in it and not being forced to do it and all of those kind of things. So it's definitely a concern.
Oh, I never even thought about it. Cause I watched like the HBO documentaries from like 8 years ago. And I was like, that seemed, but it never dawned on me to think about, you know, consent in that way, that they might not be there voluntarily.
Yeah.
And I also saw that Men and Boys, are also sex trafficked? How does the mechanics of that work? Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, if somebody tried to sex traffic me, I would resist to the point where you would have to, it would be a violent transaction. Are they violent transactions?
Yeah, so some victims, I mean, the whole getting into this situation is traffickers being skilled at finding victims who are vulnerable. And with boys, and especially young kid boys, they are vulnerable in a lot of ways that aren't actually explored. They're confused about their sexuality sometimes. They are, you know, bullied. They are going through all kinds of societal expectations of this is what a boy is supposed to be like and all of those things. And traffickers can seek out those vulnerabilities and swoop in and exploit them. So that's the same way it would happen with a female who's, you know, feeling like she's not pretty enough and low self-esteem and all of those things. So equally, it is a person's vulnerabilities. It doesn't matter what gender they are. And that's how they fall into a situation where this person comes along and is able to exploit them. That exploitation, you know, the definition of sex trafficking, I didn't go on to tell you, but it involves force, fraud, or coercion. And those three elements, we are law enforcement, we have to prove one of those things is going on in order for someone to be determined as a victim. The force is very real. It is sometimes very violent. But I don't want people to think that this happens by the myth of the movies that they might see, like Taken, where it's an abduction, because that's really actually a small percentage of how this happens. It is the traffickers investing a lot of time in the other two elements, the fraud and the coercion, and that's how this most often happens. The fraud is, I equate that to traffickers build up this amazing life, and especially with the assistance of the internet and social media, they're able to, you know, perceptions everything, and they're able to give the perception that they're successful, that they have a lot of money, that they drive nice cars, that they have a lot of jewelry, that they go on all these expensive trips and buy fancy clothes and expensive brand name outfits and things. And for a juvenile especially, you know, seeing all those things on their social media platform, they get tricked into this perception game. And when this person's backing it up with all the things I'm going to provide for you if you come with me, that is how this is happening with the fraud. And then the coercion, I equate that to the threats. The threats are very real to these victims. Traffickers in that initial trying to get to know them stage are asking all kinds of personal questions. You know, they're doing that with the intent to flip it later on and use all that information against you so they can threaten you with that information, like where your siblings go to school, and I know where your parents work, and I will do this, this, and this to them if you don't do what I say. So all of those things are intentional and used against them, and that is how they feel stuck in this situation, because they don't want something to happen to their family member or loved one.
So, God, I knew nothing about it. So it's almost brainwashing at some point, until the point where it becomes real, and then you have the wrecking ball of, oh, by the way, I know where your brother goes to school, and now what am I going to do?
Yeah, it is a very intricate web of deception and manipulation, and, you know, people, you know, for me, and that's why I reach out to be guests on podcasts, because I want to get out information to the public, because I believe in the power of awareness. I have witnessed it in some of the investigations I've had, and I am only successful with those investigations if I have a jury that believes, number one, that this person is a victim, even though I might be describing them committing acts of prostitution, which is a crime. I need a jury to see them as a victim. And then I need a jury to wrap their head around when I'm testifying that this person's freely walking down the side of the road with a phone in their hand. I'm testifying that they are trapped and they are not free to leave. And I need a jury to see that all of these dynamics that we've briefly even touched on just now exist for these victims. And that's why they stay in the situation they're in. And they're trapped. They're not free to leave in the sense of, you know, the reasons why they stay.
What changes would you make to that system then? Because that seems like a almost radically unfair set of criteria to get you to, or to force you to have to meet in order to sway a jury. What changes would you make?
I think we're doing better, because I'm coming from, since I've been doing this so long, we're going on 17 years now. I think we're doing better, because back when I first started, we were offering traffickers who are trafficking kids the same way they are today. We were offering them 9 years in prison. And now Arizona just passed a bill where it's a life sentence if you traffic a child in Arizona.
Mm.
So we are definitely getting better. I think our focus also needs to be on the other half of this problem, which are the sex buyers, the people participating in purchasing people for sex. We need stricter punishments on the sex buyers.
But even getting to the punishment phase, like to get to a conviction, like I'm imagining you and the defense has a picture of a teenager walking down the road with a cell phone, and maybe you catch them in a moment where they're not sobbing, and maybe they're checking in on the brother that just got threatened. Who knows? And to me as a juror, that looks an awful lot like free will, and. Yeah. Right.
So in
your head, is there any room to move the needle for those criteria? So to where you would say, like, where you would say, like, you know, you're an adult, you're in the room, you forget whether the child is there even willingly or held. You're an adult. You organize, you know, you brokered the transaction that, you know. To me, that should almost be all you have to prove.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we really do. I mean, it is the offer or agreement. So we don't have to walk in and see and witness the act happening with a kid or even an adult. So it is the offer or agreement. At least that's the way our statute reads in Arizona. And I think that's another dynamic here is you've got some other states that don't have
right
even a trafficking statute or don't have any punishment for sex buyers. Or recently, in 2016, I believe it was, our law changed where, you know, if I pulled over a vehicle and I, patrol officer, saw a buyer pick up a known prostitute, on that day, I would have had to prove that that buyer would have known how old she was. Now I don't have to do that. She could look like she's 23. If she's under 18, you're going to go to jail for child sex trafficking, a class 2 felony. So I think we are doing better. I think where we need to focus on is sex buyers that are repeat offenders with adults. Because right now, just to put it in perspective, if I arrest a prostitute, her fourth conviction in a 5-year period is a felony. She will go to prison for a year and have a felony on her record. There is no felony. There's nothing equal to, I could arrest a repeat offender buyer 10 times and they're not going to get a felony in Arizona. Unless they're engaging in a conversation with a child.
Right. Is there a federal statute that applies?
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a federal statute. It's just sometimes the state charges actually have more teeth than the federal charges. Because a federal charge sometimes might be only a 10-year, whereas the state, it could be a 10-year for this count and then another 10 years on top of that 10 years for this
count. Or life, like you guys.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 So, okay, so now I'm trying to wear the buyer's shoes. And God, they're so complicated because on the one hand, I'm not forcing the person to you know, I'm offering them money for an act, but it's not coercion. So I would imagine that would be harder to prosecute with a higher sentence because, you know, I can offer you money for your house, but if I'm not forcing you to sell it to me, then I didn't steal anything. Does that make any sense? And I'm not arguing for that perspective. I'm just trying to think of it from a juror standpoint. I can hear a defense attorney saying, well, you know, all John did was hold out $200. And, you know, there was no violence. There was no coercion. There's like, if you don't take the $200, I'll drive away. That's a harder argument to make than maybe it should be.
Yeah, and that's where we need to do some more focus and work on what can we do to make it a stricter punishment and, you know, actually a deterrent for buyers. The one other thing that we do in Arizona, at least, is we will tow their car for 30 days. And so they're going to have to tell their wife what happened in the car, because I'm pretty sure you can't lie your way out of why is the car gone for 30 days.
I lent it to my brother. You know, you're right. 30 days is a big span. Mm-hmm. Are there female buyers?
I have no experience with a female buyer, nor have I met a colleague.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What do you think what do you think the overarching problem is then? Not one time.
I think it's pornography. I think pornography and then, you know, the ease of OnlyFans and Patreon and all of these platforms to have it in the palm of your hand at any time that you want. I think that, you know, the initial stages of viewing that on a regular basis wears off. And then it's acted out on in real life with an actual prostitute. And so I think that one thing does lead to the other. That's my opinion for sure.
Wow. I'm sorry. I'm still blown away by the fact that you've never had one time a single.
I've never.
Holy Christmas Eve. Are there preventative programs for buyers? I know there's programs for porn addiction, but like, to the relationship between porn and prostitution and trafficking, like, I don't know if those links have been made as publicly as they should, which is why it's important for you to do it.
I think that the only class, if you will, that a buyer gets is after they've been arrested for the first time, they are offered, at least in this state, a diversion class is what they call it. And it's expensive. It's part of your fine, but you won't get a conviction on your record if you attend the class. And so in that class, they hear from law enforcement, they hear from community organizations, they hear from survivors of sex trafficking, and really try and express to them how their behavior is contributing to this overall problem. And, you know, sometimes they don't reoffend, and then sometimes they do. So it's one of those where the ones that do reoffend, that's where we need that stricter punishment.
It's almost as if a buyer, and this is really dark, but it's almost as if a buyer doesn't understand that that's a person taking the money, right?
Yeah, I've had victims describe awful things that buyers have done to them.
But just even the act of just engaging in that, I don't even like bachelor parties, so I can speak.
Yeah.
I'm fair to talk on this point. But even like the understanding that that you're handing money to a person that's somebody's son or daughter, that and to get your headspace to where you don't even recognize that, like even like we just met and I recognize you as a human being, I'm, you know, I could see you have a sense of humor and blah blah, and now that raises the level of how we interact. But I don't know how you do buyers just get to the point where it's just about the drive and not, and I don't even care that there's a person.
I think it's an element of that, and then maybe an element of excitement because they weren't getting that just viewing pornography, or they aren't getting that at home maybe. So also the excitement of potentially getting caught. I've had that too, where buyers are, you know, they're really trying to see what this would be like to get caught. So it's a crazy thing because you know how some people want to get caught.
I will take a hard pass. I will take a hard pass on getting caught.
Yeah.
Man, are you married?
Uh huh.
Does this work impact your relationship? Because you know, even the stupid stuff that I do, like, you know, the show and talking about mental health and physical health and that kind of thing, like, it you know, you spend 4 hours a day talking about abuse, which this is a form of, and, you know, you get, it impacts my relationship. Does this impact yours?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I'm remarried, so my initial marriage, I don't know that it was the job itself that affected it, but even being a police officer
in
and
general,
not being
yeah.
married to another police officer, a civilian, being married to a civilian is, you know, and it's one of those things where I advise other female officers, don't date cops because cops are the worst. They cheat, they, you know, do all kinds of bad stuff. And then on the other hand, you have someone that you're married to that doesn't understand maybe where you're coming from or how bad your day was, and then it's a game of comparison, and you know, it can definitely be hard for sure. I can tell you what was more interesting is when I was divorced and single for several years and working this job and being extra leery of these dating apps and you know, almost interrogating potential boyfriends about their pornography viewing and if they, you know, go to strip clubs and all those kind of things. Those are, you know, things that happen for me unintentionally. It's just cautiously trying to make sure that I wasn't going to, you know, pick someone that wasn't compatible with my views and my ethics and morals and things. So that was definitely difficult.
Yeah. I'm imagining us married and I come home and I say, I had a guest that would only answer one sentence at a time. And you would say, I got a girl out of a cage. And I'm like, wow, okay. It's like,
yeah.
That must, I imagine that must be hard. Is your husband a police officer as well? Or
No. Second one isn't either.
Oh, wow. Oh, well done.
Yeah.
I have I have maybe the only funny strip club story in the free world. This
oh,
is a,
yeah?
It's a little bit funny. So I'm married 25 years, so this is before all that.
Yeah.
I'm dating this girl, and she's a fitness instructor, right? And we start dating, and she's never around on Friday night. And so finally, you know, I'm 2 months into this thing. I'm like, what's the, you're dating? Like, I'm like, what's the deal with Friday nights? And she goes, okay, I'm a stripper, and you know, and that's what I do my Friday and Saturday night. That's why I'm not around. I'm like, okay, like, I don't, you know, I don't have a problem with it, but I've just never, I don't know if it's genetics or whatever. That stuff's always embarrassed me. I've always thought, like, strip clubs were more embarrassing for men because you're it's so in your reptile brain that you hand a woman a dollar and you think she likes you. That like, to me, that's, that debases men on a much higher level. So she's like, okay, well, now you have to come see me. And I'm like, ugh, I don't like strip clubs. I really don't like strip clubs. And I don't like to be in that space. And the problem is, if I see you do it and you're bad, whatever bad is, but if I see you do it and you're bad, I'm not going to be able to look at you again. So this is a really bad idea. She goes, no, you need to come see me do it. Like, she thought she was, I not only was she a bad stripper, she didn't even have, like, rhythm of basic dancing. And I'm like, wow, you're awful. And so I wound up leaving. She comes to my house at like 2 o'clock that night because she had to finish work. And I broke up. I'm like, I'm never going to be able to get that out of my head.
Well, and I think you wouldn't be able to go on. You know, you would have some trust issues.
Yeah.
Just like your thinking, you know, in your reptile mind of, you know, fantasizing whatever with this person. You happen to know her, but strangers. But think about other men fantasizing about her and
right.
Every Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah. I think I probably dodged a bullet there in the long term, but it's is there any research? This is muddy, muddy water, but is there any research around the actual, like you said before, you don't have to witness two people naked to get a conviction. Mm-hmm. Is there any research around that period of time that you could then convert into some sort of preemptive programs? Like, is there any research about what this buyer is feeling during that period of time that we could then go back and say, okay, that's a hole we have to fill another way? Is there anything like that out there at all?
I don't think so. The only research I know about is about traffickers. And what we know about traffickers is a couple of things. Traffickers, it almost seems like it's a generational thing. You know, like the car dealership guy wants to leave the car dealership to their kid to take on the business.
No.
Traffickers, at least several that I've arrested, someone in their life was either their mom was a prostitute or their aunt or somebody's sister, or also their uncle, dad, stepdad, brother, somebody was a trafficker. So it was a learned behavior passed on. That's the first observation I have.
Trafficking is a family business. Yeah. Holy shit. Sorry,
yeah, and then the second one is law enforcement's already identified this person. We've already had contact with them when they were a juvenile or young adult, and maybe there was some intervention that we could have, you know, done with this person to put them on a different path than becoming a trafficker. And so that are the two things that I do know about.
Do you hold out hope for that? You were arrested for picket. I knew you had a predilection. I couldn't get you on the whole thing, but you know, there's a program that I probably can't even force you to take that may or may not work. Do you have hope for that?
I do. I really do. I think that we need to do something because that is how this is happening. And when we're talking about this, I just want to clarify, there's different types of trafficking.
Okay.
And so I equate more organized trafficking to be like cartel and Asian massage parlors and the big organized trafficking. When we're talking about the generational thing and the juvenile corrections stay and all that, those are individual traffickers, individually trafficking victims. And those are more like the pimps that, you know, are more glamorized kind of on TV and things like that. That is what I'm referring to as the individuals that I have most contact with, and that those individuals maybe we could do some intervention with. The other organized trafficking seems to be like completely out of the country, large scale, big organizations, that kind of thing. Whereas we could do something with the individuals, I think.
What's a good day at work for you? Like, I imagine even, yeah, like even like a successful day. Well, I know you consult now, but when so those are probably good days, but yeah. but when you were actually in law enforcement, a good day, like what would a good day even look like?
A good day would be rescuing a kid, and then okay. it being an interview where the kid actually told the truth, where they wanted to get away from the situation and weren't in love with their trafficker and loyal to their trafficker and wanted actual help. And then in the investigation, going to the hotel, doing the warrant at the hotel, finding the trafficker there, finding all the evidence there, and then and then booking this person into jail and knowing that, you know, we got justice and that person's not able to traffic someone else. I think that's a good day. On top of a day where you have a case and it gets sentenced, and like the one that comes to mind for me is the biggest case of my career. It took 5 years to go to trial, and we spent 7 months in trial, and the best day of my career was the day that the jury came back with finding him guilty on 101 out of 105 counts.
Ho!
He was sentenced to 493.5 years in prison. That was a good day.
100 and wow, man, I need to have you on 5 times because people need to hear this. This is,
yeah, well, that was familial trafficking, and that was 7 victims, 2 juveniles. So lots of things going on with that case and why it was such a huge sentence, a record for the United States, actually. And you know, that's a truly evil individual that is no longer able to conduct his exploitation on anyone else. So that is, you know, the ultimate good day.
I was going to ask you about that. There's sickness and there's evil. How do you draw the distinction between the two, having seen real evil?
Well, I mean, in the victimization, with that case, that trafficker had a fascination with a French pornography book and film called The Story of O. And The Story of O was all about the dominant and the submissive, and the character in The Story of O created rules where the girls weren't allowed to wear undergarments, they weren't allowed to cross their legs when they sat down. The one victim described having to wear a dog collar chained to the wall with only enough leeway, you know, chain to go to the bathroom, being whooped with riding crop, sodomized with objects. Like, all of those things happened in this case to these victims, and so that is pure evil for sure.
Mm. Do you, am I wrong in drawing like a bunch of parallels between trafficking and cult thinking? Because, you know, you talked about like people that like are in love with their traffickers. And to me, that's cult right there. This person has absolutely no positive intent for me whatsoever, is telling me that they have a 6-leaf clover. I know they don't have a 6-leaf clover. I can see their clover. And I know what's happening to my life, but I'm so bent that it's a cult. Is there a parallel there?
Yeah, I think that's part of the strength of traffickers' manipulation, is this belief of this amazing outcome of this life with them. And they're so skilled at portraying this outcome that these victims believe the hype. And it's really hard to convince them and show them this reality of what they've been going through. When I'm interviewing victims, I ask the question almost every time, what is your definition of a pimp? And it doesn't matter how old the victim is, juvenile, adult, they all describe the person, you know, that is an asshole, taking your money, very violent, all the things. And then we go talking through all the things that they've experienced with this person that they claim to be a boyfriend and someone that cares about them. But they're not making the connection of their own definition of what a pimp is and what this person's been doing to them.
Mm. Do you have kids?
I do.
One. boy or girl?
Boy.
Okay. Do you have like a conversation about this? I'm thinking about it from a parent's perspective now. Like, what should I be doing? Like, I have a 17-year-old daughter. What should I be?
Yeah.
Is there something preventative, a conversation? I get the basics, like, you know, monitor to the extent that you can their internet involvement, and, you know, too much time alone in your bedroom in the dark when it's noon is probably bad, and, yeah. You know, watch for it. But is there like a particular conversation I could have where I...
Funny you should bring that up. So I wrote a book on how to have the conversation.
Oh, hello. Okay. Yeah.
And basically this book is about navigating difficult conversations with youth about online safety and not only sex trafficking, but sextortion, luring a minor for sex, you know, some of the other crimes that our kids are facing now that everything is online, on social media, on apps, on games, and having conversations with them about, you know, these things is what I feel is most important, because law enforcement's overwhelmed. We are overwhelmed with this explosion of people who can secretly be behind a computer screen and be hurting people. And so we need parents to come up to the table with prevention conversations, just like you were saying, where we can talk to our kids about this in advance of it happening to them. Mm-hmm. And the other shocking thing that I want to bring to your audience is I started investigating this crime where the national average age of entry was 15. Today, in 2025, it's 13 years old. And we've recently rescued a couple of 11 and 12-year-olds. So that means that these prevention conversations need to happen at 8, 9, 10 years old or earlier. Certainly, God, if you're going to give them access to a game or a device or an app or a social media platform, before they get access to those platforms, these conversations need to be a reoccurring and established thing, so that when they're, it's not if, but it's when they're online and someone slides into their DMs and private messages them, they can recognize, wait a minute, my mom told me this would happen. My mom would talk to me about how people who are not people we know in real life, not really friends, but even though Facebook says they are, would come in to my message and ask me personal information about myself, where I go to school, whereabouts I live, how old I am, where are my parents at right now, what do they do for a living, where do they work, what kind of cars do they drive, where do my siblings go to school, how old are they, all of those kind of things. And then if a person who's in my DM starts complimenting me, saying I'm too sexy to be 13, you know, some inappropriate things, and then moves the conversation into, how do you feel about kissing? Have you ever kissed a boy before? Those scary things, they can recognize that conversation moving on that path. And number one, stop engaging with that person because they recognize this is a dangerous situation. And number two, go tell their parent about it. And I call it self-policing themselves, because I, the parent, have had the conversation with them in advance of this happening. They will recognize it and they'll come tell me about it. And that is what I'm trying to accomplish with my book. And I'm having it translated in Spanish also right now, because I want to reach, you know, non-English speaking parents, starting with Spanish, other languages hopefully. But I think that it's a vulnerability in itself that traffickers target kids whose parents don't speak English, because they don't know what's going on at all.
That makes sense. Yeah. Is a book available everywhere?
Yeah, on Amazon and then wherever books are sold. And then I'm working on reading it myself, so I have an audio version of it. And then I'm having it translated in Spanish audibly as well.
And the book's called Talk to Them.
Yep.
I just want to make sure people hear that.
Yeah, pretty simple. I need you to talk to them.
Yeah, man. Do you, I got messed up because you said 11 and 12-year-olds, and I just remember my daughter when she was 11 or 12, and I'm like, God, that is just, I can't even imagine. I know you present to law enforcement. I'm talking about your consulting work now. I know you present to law enforcement. Do you present to schools?
I present to schools in the way of school staff, security, the nurse, counselor, teachers, administrators. There are other organizations out there that do a much better job reaching kids. I do have an online digital safety class that I have filmed that's actually hosted on another platform. I'm partnered with Nurses United Against Human Trafficking, and so that is where that class is. But I definitely, you know, I think that it's a need. It's just there's other organizations. I'm not sure what part of the United States you're in, but there is a lady who's, her name's Rachel Thomas, and she is a survivor of trafficking, and she's created an entire curriculum and for parents, you know, a website that they can take a little quiz to see if these things are going on with me and my kid and how at risk of being involved in something like trafficking that they might be in. And she's done an amazing job, so I wouldn't want to take away from that, because that is like the ultimate resource there. I believe it is not ending the game. I'll have to send you the link, but it is Rachel Thomas, and she actually entered the life of prostitution in college. She was, she's beautiful, and she was at a location, I guess, where someone contacted her about a modeling contract, an opportunity, and, you know, you fill out the modeling paperwork, your social security number, where you live, references, and then that person used those things, those personal information things against her, and, you know, trafficked her by using the threats.
Wow.
So she was involved with that for some time, and she's nationally speaks about her experience as a survivor.
I will push back a little bit. I think you would be great in schools. And the reason I ask is it's such a hard space. Like I do work with this organization that deals with teen suicide, and we do presentations in schools, and you would think, and I'm going to make the argument for why schools are so important. But you would think that a presentation, the woman that it's called James the Warriors, and the woman that runs it lost her son to death by suicide, and so she just kind of made this her thing. And she's like you. She's also a school nurse. She's like you. She has seen it all. She, you know, she can speak articulately about it, and she works in a school system. And even then, the schools are so reluctant to have, like, if I was a principal of a school, my first assembly would be about teen suicide, and, you know, and talk, but the actual opposite is true. We can't mention it. It's too scary. It's too blah blah blah. And but my argument about why somebody who has seen as much as you have and can is so articulate about the subject should be in schools is because so much of what, like, I just know from my own daughter, so much of her belief system and action is based on what the friend group around her is doing. And if you present to a school and one person in the friend group says, yeah, that guy online is called a creeper, I have one, I guarantee you that friend group will all be all eyes on for creepers for the next year and a half, because that's so impactful to do. I'll email you and try to talk you into getting involved. Because because one person's doing it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. And, you know, yeah, she has one perspective, but you also have a valuable perspective. And, you know, I just think schools would, you know, you're a parent, like you can talk a lot, you can have the conversation, you can blah blah, and you should, and you will move the needle for sure. But you know, there's that saying, like, how do you get a 14-year-old girl to do something, get a 16-year-old girl to tell her to do it. Yeah. And, you know, and so there's so much value in that, I think. Also, the testimony, and I bet this is so hard for you to get, but, like, the testimony of past victims, like Rachel Thomas, who you just talked about, I mean, that would be so valuable, but, man, that's a hard get, I bet.
Yeah, I have a lot of victims, you know, that they're going through, and it takes long time, years and years, to recover from what they've been through, and specifically that girl that was involved in that case, it was her uncle. The 7-month-long trial, the big sentence. And I spent, you know, when she testified, she was in her 20s. The jury saw a 20-year-old. And I spent 7 months with her. in that we were going to court all the time, and she wanted to see the whole case through. And, you know, mentally, she's stuck at 16.
Mm.
She to this day doesn't have a job and has, you know, she doesn't know how to drive a car and, you know, lots and lots of issues. So it's one of those things where having survivors, you know, come out the other side and participate in, you know, their own testimony like Rachel Thomas does and so many others, or become victim advocates, because they are the ones that really help law enforcement get to the bottom of what happened with these kids, because they can relate with these kids in a whole nother level that I could never. I mean, I have a lived experience as a female undercover, but I am not I'm not going to ever try and equate that to what a survivor has gone through and experienced. So having survivor victim advocates assist law enforcement with getting victims to come forward, to talk to us, to tell us all about what happened to them is incredibly important. And, you know, that's what we need survivors to come forward and help with if they're on the other side of their recovery.
Yeah. If you, in your experience as an undercover, could you tell immediately that something was off, or did you have interactions with people where you were like, that guy could be my fourth grade teacher too?
No, in the element and underground world that I participated in, everyone was a bad guy.
Man. has this dinged your view of men?
You know, I've tried to not let it be, because, I mean, I have a son, and I would never want him to feel like I felt differently about him as a result of my job and my experiences in life. But it is, you know, difficult, especially, like I said, when I was single. That definitely was a struggle.
I would imagine, like, I would imagine it would be near impossible for you to not be a little bit on edge every single time.
Yeah.
How did your husband win then? What'd he do right?
Well, you know what it is, he is very close with God, and he actually brought me back to being close with God. So I think that is what, you know, really brought me forward and back to, I can be with someone and all of those things. And that really helped.
Did you, I think everybody who spends, you can obviously correct me because I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but I think everybody who spends 17 plus years, you're 19 years in law enforcement?
Right now I'm 27.
27 years?
Yeah.
You have to have PTSD.
Yeah.
You do. Okay. Does your faith help you at all in that regard?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, especially with going through long trials like that, or trials with traffickers that are not only just a trafficker, but a big time gang member. And they may be getting put in jail, but their, you know, fellow gang member friends are still out of custody and could carry out anything that head gang member wanted to accomplish. You know, if I was living with this in the back of my mind all the way, without faith in God and protecting me, then I wouldn't be able to continue on.
Yeah.
Flat out. So it's a paramount thing for me, for sure.
So you're still active in law enforcement. You consult, but you're also...
Uh-huh.
And how many years? 26 and a half?
I'm going on 27. Uh-huh.
When are we pulling the plug? 27. Oh. 27 is a good run,
I'm
no?
I'm trying to have my business take off.
Oh, okay. All right. So then we'll push that.
My business of speaking and presenting to community organizations, businesses, conferences, summits, all of those things, and then law enforcement training. And so I have just linked up with a training company, actually, that's you know, doing really good things, and I'm actually setting some dates for law enforcement training. So... as long as that, and then, of course, if this takes off, I'm not a bestseller, but, you know, I'm very hopeful that even with offering other versions of it in other languages, that will take off. I just need to figure out how to market it to that demographic, because I don't speak any Spanish at all.
Right.
I mean, I used to back in patrol. I could pull you over and tell you you're getting a ticket, But that is, if you don't use it, you lose it. So.
That's not helpful. Let me sit you down, my dear daughter, and tell you you're getting a ticket even though you don't drive, because that's the only Spanish I can speak. Yeah, I can get where that would be problematic.
Yeah.
How do you deal with your mental health confronting all this? Because, like, I can see, like, if this is stereotypical of me, forgive me, but I can see a guy, like, taking your job and going, okay, it's fine to it's noble to protect women, it's blah 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 blah, and I am 5'10" and a 185, and I'm never gonna have to worry about, and I have like a decent life, nobody's gonna talk me into this, and blah blah blah. But as a woman, I would imagine that there's always a, wow, that could have been me in there, and just like a bigger percentage of vulnerability, and that would bang my mental health up a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I think the way that I deal with it is, not only do I take a lot of pride in getting victims justice and making that a continual thing, where I'm very busy. I occupy my time with not only my business, but being an author, and then work, still in law enforcement, and all the things that I'm doing. I think that's how I'm coping with all of this, is just making myself extremely over the top busy, that I don't have time to sit and think about.
That's a legit strategy.
How it's affecting me. Not yet, at least. This could strategy. All be cracking down.
Yeah. No, that maybe don't retire. Maybe yeah. Just keep pushing it. What's your writing process? I'm fascinated by authors, right? Like, are you like a disciplined, like, sit down and I'm doing from 12 to 2, or do you handwrite? What's your deal?
Yeah, I start with Google Docs, obviously, typing in Google Docs. But I think for me, outlining the chapters that I wanted to focus on, and then finding relative cases and stories and experiences of mine that I could equate to the lesson at hand, I guess you could say, in each of the chapters, and then carrying it out through, you know, kind of this systematic, define the problem, because I'm very black and white, you know how cops are. On this date and time, this happened. I actually hate writing, really.
Do you really?
I've written reports my whole life.
Oh, right.
Police reports. But I did want, I mean, the drive for me was continuing to get the question, just like you asked, how do I talk to my kids about this? And so I wanted to offer a solution to that. And I literally woke up one morning and then decided I'm going to write a book about answering that question. It wasn't something I thought about for years and things. It was literally done in about 5 months.
So you never wrote a book before, and you wrote a book in 5 months?
Yeah.
I was thinking we could be friends, but now we cannot, because I've written books and it's taken me like 2 years. So if you can do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's for me, it's like a how-to guide. So it's really not, you know, all in depth with character building and all the
right.
I mean, that is, I don't know what kind of books you write. But nonfiction for me is, you know, this is the problem, this is how you solve the problem, or try and prevent this from happening. Right. That's my mindset on that.
Have you ever been in therapy for this?
No.
Wow. I would be knee deep in therapy if I was working in trafficking, because it would make me so sad.
It does make me sad.
Yeah, because it's almost this is why. One reason why what you do is so, it's so important to get out. You have a person with an existing vulnerability, right? That's really sad in and of itself. Just stop right there. To have a person in the condition where they could be persuaded or offered this, and not have the family life, the spiritual life, the social life, whatever, to as a counterweight to that, right? That's sad. That in and of itself is sad enough. Now there exists a monster who has the nose of a dog, who can smell the things that a normal person can't smell, and can smell that on you, and then has created a craft of manipulation, which I would imagine these interactions are probably months long before before the victim says, okay, yeah, I want the car you drive. Yeah, those are dark arts crafts, to be able to twist somebody that hard and smell it on that. And then to see that result in a trap you can't get out of, where now I've got you, and I also know where your brother goes to college, and I also know, you know, that your grandmother does not have an alarm on her door, and blah blah blah. Blah. Mm-hmm. I mean, to amongst dark things, that's got to be in the top 10. Do you work out?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Does that help?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Does your husband work out? Do you work out with him?
Sometimes. Okay. We have a home gym, so it's a little hard when it's
nice. You
know, one treadmill and.
Yeah. What do you do for fun?
Well, really, I'm right now doing this second
no
business.
No fun.
It's been fun. It's oh, been okay. fun for me. It's been. I think I like the challenge. You know, creating social media posts and scheduling things and email marketing and all. I guess the fun is educating myself on how to have this business, because I come from zero education on how to do that. I'm a police officer, so
right.
Becoming a business owner has been quite challenging, because there's, you know, so much to do, build a website, you know, be consistent and seen on all of these different social media platforms.
It's do you
trying to be everywhere?
You have the same kind of problem that, and I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but you have the same kind of problem that I have with teen suicide, in that you're never going to get an accurate metric. Like, you're going to go train a particular police department, right? And then you're going to come back home. You and your husband are going to fight about the treadmill. You're going to write another book, and that other police department. One officer in that police department is going to think about what you said, have an interaction, and prevent something from happening. You're never going to know that. Is it hard for you to work in a space like, when you're a police officer? I got number of arrests, I got number of convictions, I got, you know, maybe or maybe not revenue from traffic tickets, depending on if you buy that or not. You very, very good. You kept the face. I like that. That was good. But now you're working in a space where it could, you could go to a police department and you could save 25 lives in the next month and never know about it. Do you think about that?
Yeah. I think that doing nothing and no awareness education and no training is, you know, the wrong side of where to be. And so I really try and focus on whether or not I ever hear back or not, the outcome. I know it's working, because I wouldn't be getting juries that find them guilty on all counts and having the sentence go from 9 years to 108 years to almost 500 years. You know what I mean? So I've seen this, and I call it the power of awareness. It's because of, I feel, my contribution as well as others in the awareness to the public, where we're getting the outcomes that we're getting. That's where I see the measure of success.
When you train, I'm going back to the legal for a second. When you train police departments, do you train them in, I'm not a police officer, nor have I ever been one, on like a checklist of, listen, this is what your arrest needs to look like. This is what your case needs to look like. This is what you, or are you just more oriented towards, this is what the crime looks like, get in there and we'll figure it out afterwards?
No, I have specific classes with specific goals, like patrol. In 1998, when I was in the police academy, I didn't get a class on what human trafficking was. I was trained on drugs and drug dealers and gangsters, right? And right. So the traffickers are walking around unseen. They really are. And I actually caught a Facebook Live of a pimp kind of like filming himself. And there were five patrol cars in the background. And he was bragging about the cops not seeing him. And he's not half wrong, because we never trained patrol to look for pimps. And so I have a specific focus on patrol recognizing in a traffic stop, in a domestic violence call, responding to a hotel for a loud noise complaint, and a, you know, vehicle broke down on the side of the road. Any kind of call that you could be on, open your eyes, look around, and know what you're looking at, so that you can recognize this trafficking situation that might be happening here. And then what to do with that information. And if it's an agency that's a, you know, a whole 12 cops for the whole agency in a small town, you're going to be the detective that also has to interview the victim. So I do a whole class on interviewing. You're going to be the detective that has to interrogate the suspect. So I do a class on interrogating traffickers specifically, because there's things you need to know, mm-hmm. like terminology. There's rules, like there's certain lifestyle things going specific with trafficking than no other crime has. And then I talk about putting these cases together for successful prosecution, because these cases are really about this victim versus what this suspect says. I'm not going to have a witness that said they saw this victim go have sex with a buyer and make money and turn the money over to their trafficker. So how are we going to prove that? And so I do an entire class on corroborative evidence and how to tell the story to give more weight to what the victim is describing happened versus what the suspect says. And then now I have a new class on, I call it Tackling a Trafficker with a Team and Taking Their Treasures. And it's basically a class on taking their assets and seizing their bank accounts and their Rolex watches and their Gucci purses and all of their expensive shit that they bought with the proceeds of illegal funds. And it's a money laundering illegal enterprise financial crimes investigation, because I've had four pimps that I've put in prison or jail, and they got out, because they've been doing this so long, they got out already and they went right back to pimping and pimping kids. And so putting them in prison isn't enough. It's not enough. We need to take all their shit so that when they get out, they have no leg to stand on and nothing to go back to.
Right.
And so encouraging law enforcement to do those not so sexy, not so fun bank subpoenas and looking at financials and doing those kind of cases is my next mission, because I see the other outcome of we're not doing enough, even just putting them in jail.
Man, how long would it take you to become a lawyer if you wanted to?
Probably a shit long time, because I don't have any college. I mean, I have some college, community college, but I know what I know from experience and being out on the streets and being in it. So I would have to go start with bachelor's degree and master's and law school, and all those things.
Let me rephrase the question. How long do you think it would take you to know everything a lawyer knows?
Well, I think...
Today?
I mean, I think that I don't know about certain things, like, certain hearings. Like, they call it a 404 hearing. Like, I know what a 404 hearing is, kind of, but I don't know what it takes to make it be a 404 hearing. And basically, that means we can use evidence from the past, even though these things might be beyond the statute of limitations. We can bring that information in because it helps show the behavior and character of the suspect in the trial. But I don't know a whole lot, I am sure. And my knowledge and an attorney that's knowledgeable, between the two of us, there ain't nobody getting past being convicted.
Thank God.
I think that educating yourself and having a great lawyer is what's making this also a great team and a success as well.
Is there a craft to testifying in cases like this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I testify as an expert witness all the time. And it's one of those where if it's my case, then I can speak to, you know, my experience and background and training and those kind of things. But if it's where I come in as a blind witness, I'm literally there to educate the jury about this lifestyle, just like we've been doing here right now. And with the hopes that they do recognize that this person is not free to leave and trapped and all of those things. And I think bringing in a blind witness into the trials so that it can't be argued that I had any knowledge of the case at all, and yet the things that I'm testifying to, the jury is recognizing when the victim testifies those things happen to them. I think that's huge and you know, critical to bring in an expert witness.
Right. Man, this is so layered. I didn't realize it was as complicated as it is.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of success stories. I mean, I have some great successes, but a lot of times, and unfortunately, hundreds of cases over the years where we have victims that don't want to play the game of the justice system. Because, like I said, that one case took 5 years to resolve. And you don't want, you have victims out there that don't want to go to court, pay for parking, walk to the courthouse, have to see the pimp, and then hear the judge say, let's continue this in another 6 months. And then 6 months later, pay for parking, go to the court, have to see their suspect, and do it again and again and again. And they bow out, and they don't want to press charges anymore. And if they're not there, I can't testify for them. They have to testify to what happened to them. And that's the way the justice system is set up, because unfortunately, the accused has a right to hear from their accuser.
Right.
And so that's what makes it way difficult. Like, probably the most difficult part of all the things we've talked about is getting to the point where we have a victim in that chair testifying and identifying their trafficker and talking about what happened to them, so that strangers in a box of 12 can hear what happened to them and decide the outcome.
Well, you almost have to undo, and you don't have the same access that the pimp would have, but you almost have to undo the brainwashing to get to the point where somebody would be it's probably the wrong word, but like a dedicated witness where, like, yeah, no, you tell me where to be, I'll show until this thing's over. Like, you know, you have to go through that. You almost, and but you don't have the advantage of, hey, I can talk to you at 11 o'clock online at night when you're, you know, or I can, you know, I can.
Well, we do when we have victim advocates that work with law enforcement.
Oh, okay.
And those people are there for those, you know, midnight calls or, you know, hey, I need a ride to a job interview, or
right.
I need to find a way to get my birth certificate back or a new copy of it because I lost it at, you know, 100 hotels ago, or the pimp ripped it up right in front of me. That was part of why I stayed, is because I didn't have a birth certificate to go get an ID.
Oh, wow.
So yes, having a victim advocate is huge.
Yeah. You're awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so your website, what website do you want people to check out?
Yeah, so when I retired, I started my own side business. We all have side hustles now, I think. And so it's called A Chance for Awareness, pun intended, on the last name. And it's basically a platform where I have resources. I have a sex trafficking indicators list where if someone wants to download that, they can maybe look over some of the things that might be happening with someone they know, and, you know, also where to report it. There's the National Human Trafficking Hotline. The National Human Trafficking Hotline's in Washington, D.C. I'm all the way in Arizona. Sometimes it's a 2 or 3 day process to get your complaint to the hotline, to the detective that would actually work it. So it's best to call local law enforcement, especially if it's a crime in progress happening right now. That would be 911. But some states, like Arizona, have created their own state hotline. And so having those phone numbers programmed in your phone, because what we really need is people to be good witnesses. You don't have to provide your home phone number or your home address. You can give me your work phone, okay? You don't have to have the cops show up at your house. We don't have to have the police car and the uniform show and knock on your door. We can have the information taken over the phone. But please stick around, be a good witness, and report so that we can get this victim help, because I've had so many victims describe getting beat up in broad daylight and people walking by and cars driving by and no one called the police or did anything to help. And maybe one person broke out their phone, but it was for a TikTok to make the thing go viral instead of actually helping someone. So
yeah.
I plead to, you know, people to make the call and report it, and, you know, be available by phone for us to ask other questions. You may have witnessed something else that you didn't think of to tell us. But just report.
Right, man. And say the name of the book again.
Oh, it's called Talk to Them.
Beautiful.
And basically, you know, like I said, it's on Amazon, and I really would like to get this in the hands of some Spanish-speaking only parents so that they can know what's going on also, because I don't think that they realize what's going on when their kids ask them for the apps and the phones and things, and there are pimps out there targeting these kids.
Could we do another one in like 3 or 6 months and just check in on your progress and everything? Would that be cool?
For sure.
Oh, thank you so much. And I promise not to fuck up the date next time too. Yeah. So we have that in your back pocket too.
Yes, thank you.
No, but thank you so much for being so dedicated to this. And thank you so much for you and the thing that really the thing I'm walking away most impressed with is you have like top down vision on this whole issue that I don't think it's an under discussed issue to begin with, but there's very few people who have the top down vision that you have, where like you get like the sex buyers part of the problem. There's a cult, there's manipulation, there's blah blah. It's like I don't think there's very many people that see all the moving parts, and you do. So please keep going.
Yes, absolutely.
Beautiful, man. All right, I'm gonna hit stop, but don't hang up because it needs like 1 second just to upload.
Thank you.